Coming up this week on The Course of Life, it was an all-time Sunday leaderboard at Torrey Pines for the U.S. Open finish. Amazing spectacle and a very fateful and Cinderella finish. We get to our highlights, plus the quarter tours back on as well, and all the other sports headlines we're tuned into and things we're tuned into outside of sports as well. Plus, this week's guest is Darren Wood, friend of the show. He runs a really cool account called the Fairways and Food account on Instagram. We get all into that and much more, and we end with food, always ending with food. Of course, all of it brought to you by our friends at Active Body. Mike, I'm going back home for the first time in about a year and a half.
Congrats.
It's nice, and there's not a whole lot you can pack, though, when you're just going, you know, backpack and one small duffel. So when you're trying to, like, get in any sort of exercise or workout, you got to keep it portable, and you got to keep it compact, and that's exactly what the Active 5 unit is from Active Body. It's about the size of your fist, and it's the device that connects directly to your phone, and it gives you quick and concise workouts. You can do it in, like, 5 to 10 minutes, so I'll be doing them from the comfort of my home or wherever I am traveling this upcoming weekend. You can do the same as well. So check out activebody.com and use our promo code COL for 20% off. Again, COL for 20% off your Active 5 unit today.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Groovy Golf, and Tosi Snacks. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, it was a beautiful week out in California. We had fog, ocean breeze, parasailers, just everything you could ask for to really help drive home those California vibes at Torrey Pines. And we had one person there who said, hey, COVID, F you. Yes. And decided to win a major. So.
How about the 2-week turnaround and the official Jon Rahm COVID revenge tour? The vengeance has been complete in the most Cinderella way. Let's rewind that clock real quick a couple weeks ago, because Jon Rahm was dominating at Memorial, up 6 shots, told he tested positive right after his Saturday round, essentially throwing away $1.7 million in the tournament he was all but sure to win. He goes into COVID protocol, takes it like an absolute champ. The whole time, does what he needs to do to be cleared, shows up at Torrey, a place that he's got tons of history at, which we'll get into, and absolutely dominates for his first major win. Really impressive.
Yeah, you know, the best thing that probably happened to Jon Rahm was getting COVID.
That, which is amazing. We haven't been able to say that very much in the last year and a half, but that's actually the truth for Jon Rahm.
Yeah, it really is. What would you rather do, John? Would you rather have won the Memorial, or would you rather have won this? Because you probably wouldn't have been able to win both. That's just not how, it's not how it works.
You're right about that. It is very tricky to do that. He would have taken last week off in theory, may have still been coming down from a dominating performance in Ohio. So it's funny how the stars align for that. And like I said, with the stars aligning in San Diego, the connections with Jon Rahm to Torrey Pines in San Diego are unbelievable when you run through it. Not only did he win his first PGA Tour event here, the Farmers Insurance, with a dramatic eagle on the 18th green, but he also proposed to his now wife, who they have a kid together with, at Torrey Pines on the cliffs during a tournament week there in the past. He just has a lot of great connections to this venue, and sure enough, when he got to the 18th and the 17th for that matter, and needed the big celebration, roar-inducing putts, he drained them both.
Yeah. So here's the question, though, because we saw this throughout the day where Jon Rahm was certainly surging, shot a 67, one of the best rounds, if not the best round of the day, to come back. But we saw a lot of other players just fall away. We saw Louis Oosthuizen have the lead and throw it away. We saw Brooks Koepka and Colin Morikawa make surges and fall away. Yeah. We saw our favorite golfer of all time, Bryson DeChambeau, throw up a quad.
Oh, my. So, what a moment that was.
And we had hints throughout the day, too, that, you know, this feeling that maybe we'd get really lucky and see a Brooks and Bryson playoff.
Yes. That was out there as well. There were so many storylines floating Sunday afternoon. I took a kind of a mental snapshot when everyone was through about maybe 6 to 9 holes. It was the most stacked leaderboard you can imagine. Brooks, Bryson, Rahm, Morikawa, Rory, all on page one. You can't sort it out any better than that. And you're right. It was a battle of attrition. Guys were falling apart. US Open carnage was hitting hard late on Sunday. And it's funny because we always knock Rahm for kind of losing his cool and having a really tough time keeping hold of the moment, maintaining his patience. That's exactly what he did. He finally broke through exactly when he needed to. That's been holding him back for a while. You could see how resilient he was. So shout out to the perseverance and our 9 core values from our friends at the First Tee, because John Rahm persevered and he was very, very resilient when he needed to be.
So I want to ask the question too, as to the 3 majors we've had this year, which win, I already know the answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Which win is more impressive from the 3 we've seen this year?
I mean,
the answer already.
Impressive is still Phil, just in terms of the feat and his age and where he's able to do it at amidst the form he had. Mm-hmm. But the finish, the best finish by far was at Torrey. It took forever for the leaderboard to sort itself out, which is exactly what you want. You want it to be bumper cars all the way through on Sunday, and that's what it was. And for Rahm to step up and drain both those putts, you got the true major championship 71st, 72nd hole roars that we've been dying to see. Really just an amazing spectacle. And yeah, like you mentioned, you also got that crazy carnage, Mike, that Bryson meltdown. There was a shank chip in there. There was a skull bunker shot. Looked a lot like things that we've seen on the golf course before.
Yeah, it looked very real to me. A friend of mine texted me and said he likes to see players on tour playing just like we play out there in the real world. So, especially when it's someone like Bryson.
Yeah, an 8 and a 7 on his final round scorecard. How about that?
I usually have a lot of those on my scorecard.
Yes. So. It's a good number for us.
Let's also shout out 2 guys that we just were all over when they made the weekend and just couldn't believe that they were on the top page of the leaderboard for a while there, Taylor Montgomery and Dylan Wu.
Yes, this was awesome. Shout out our past Course of Life podcast guests. You remember we had them both on like early quarantine COVID when everything was in question and we weren't sure when golf was going to come back. And they were both doing very well on the Korn Ferry Tour money list and continued to. Taylor Montgomery made the cut, finished on the lower half of the leaderboard, but Dylan Wu really thriving under the pressure. He showed his face on the first page of the leaderboard on Thursday and nipped around the second page on the weekend. Some very impressive stuff to see them play the weekend. Mike, you know how much this means to them. These are Korn Ferry guys that don't have PGA Tour status playing in some of their biggest stages of their life. For them to come through and make the weekend, just oodles of confidence for them heading into the rest of the season.
I mean, Dylan Wu finishing tied 31st. That's a huge paycheck for him now, too, of course. Just making the weekend is going to pay for everything.
I mean,
for
it's a while, basically like a winner's check on the Korn Ferry Tour.
Pretty much.
US Open. So he knows exactly how far that's going to go. I did send him a message of congratulations, and he was thankful for it. He's looking forward to heading right back out onto the Korn Ferry Tour and finishing the job now. For him, it's about getting to the finish line and Taylor as well and getting into that 25 to get the tour card. So hopefully we see them back next year at the US Open as well.
Hopefully as well. And for the next few weeks, we'll kind of you'll have a little lull. But in a month, of course, we'll be back on the major circuit for the British. Let's go really early here. I'm going to throw this question out now. All right. Of the 3 major champions I already know the answer to this one, too. I'm asking questions I already know the answer to. Of the 3 major champions this year, who is the best chance to win another one at the British?
You know, I'm inclined by recency bias to say John Rahm.
Well, yeah.
But I don't know. Phil's had some is an open champion in his own right and has had some decent performances there. A venue he never thought he would win a major at. He did steal one. This is a very tough question. I'm leaning between Hideki or Phil on that one. What's your answer?
I would still go John Rahm here. I think in terms of who could be the most consistent player out there. Well, if you're looking most consistent, you're probably looking at Matsuyama. But in terms of who I think can really rise to the occasion, I feel like John Rahm's the one with what he's been able to show over the last 2 weeks, from almost winning the Memorial to winning here. I think his growth this season is maybe going to be the most. Phil, I feel like he said after he won the PGA, he may never win again. I think that's probably true.
Shout out to Phil. He can still say he won the PGA for months and months on end. So we look forward to that bragging. Looking to be a great stage for the summer of golf. We've got a nice number one battle between DJ and Rahm. As you saw this weekend, we've got all the right players playing well on big stages. It's going to set up well for the next few months.
And we got a Summer Olympics coming up too.
So we'll have very soon. Olympic golf.
So that was the U.S. Open, and we'll talk more golf, and we'll talk about where the PGA Tour is coming in a little bit. Let's talk about the Corda Tour, because that was back on.
Again, you know, we retired that term for a little bit with our LPGA conversation, but here goes Nelly Korda again, stepping back into the winner's circle. I think there was a 62 in there at some point during the week for her. It's finished somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 under par. We go through this a lot when we talk LPGA. I'm just like, Mike, we just weren't, us and pretty much 99% of the people listening can't really fathom 25 under par. Like, what does that even mean? How is that done, let alone in 1 week of golf? So the birdies were abundant for the Corda Tour, and the nickname is officially back on.
I mean, 25 under par would be taking 25 strokes off my average round and still being over par.
Yeah, that's a deep round, isn't it?
So, I mean, everyone is like, oh, it's not that hard to play golf. It's not that hard to play golf. It's really hard to play golf well and consistently.
Touché, sir. Yeah, so shout out to Nelly Korda. The Corda Tour is back on. So, Jessica, you heard the memo. You're clearly up next. It's your turn to step back into the winner's circle.
Like we said, the Travelers Championship is up next for the PGA Tour in Cromwell, Connecticut. It's like the only tournament in New England, I think, now, pretty much, right?
Yeah, because they alternate with the Boston and New York for the playoff that goes between TBC. So technically, yeah, it's the only mainstay. I'll do another quick shout-out to Corn Ferry Tour heading to Maine as well. How about that for a new stop on the Corn Ferry Tour? So there's some New England golf action coming our way here in the next week. I love the Travelers. I have an affinity for this tournament. It's right down the road from where you and I went to college at Quinnipiac. Yep. And I visited a few times. Let's say it's the first place I saw Ricky Fowler in the all orange as a young kid playing on tour. I saw an amazing Bubba Watson playoff win where he almost holed the wedge shot. I wish I was there when Jordan Spieth holed that amazing bunker shot. Remember the flying chest bump there with the caddy? So there's been some amazing moments at this stage, and it's a really cool venue.
Yeah, there's going to still be a pretty big field going out here. Patrick Cantlay, the leader of the FedEx Cup, is going to be there. We're also going to have DJ Patrick Reed, Bryson, Brooks's brother Chase will also be there.
Yes. Reception. Saw that.
So, and Ricky Fowler coming back after missing his first U.S. Open since 2010.
Yeah, he's got good vibes at this course as well. He's had a lot of good finishes there. One other person I want to shout out who's a friend of yours and I and myself and the show, who I know right now as we speak, we'll find out by the time this airs if he made it. Our buddy Neil Johnson, Mike, who we know well, he made it through the pre-qualifier. He has Monday qualified for the Travelers before. He's trying his luck again this week, so hopefully he gets through. Shout out to Neil for making it as far as he did. We know he's out there grinding week in and week out, and hopefully we see him this week pegging it at TPC River Highlands as well.
Indeed, we'll keep an eye on that. Our picks will be up on Twitter come Wednesday night. We got real close this past week at
We were both sitting on Morikawa too. He was four back heading into Sunday. It felt like, you know, DJ and Morikawa were playing together at 1-under. The lead was at 5-under starting Sunday. I had it in my head that one of those guys was going to post a number, but it wasn't either one. It was John Rahm in the end.
Didn't quite happen, but that's all right. But that just means we're hot. One of us is due for another win. We're both two-time winners with our picks this year. So,
and by the way, I want to shout out Bubba because you threw his name out randomly.
He was
last
up there.
Week.
Yeah,
he did make an appearance, and I just said his name as well as a past champion in Connecticut. I think that might be on our list. So check out Twitter Wednesday night. I'm at Course of Life One, and you're at MWRINC for our full picks.
Let's switch over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. Disney Plus's Loki came out with its 5-minute Marvel logo to begin every episode, which is just really annoying.
5-minute logo?
I mean, I feel like the episode's like 50 minutes, and I feel like the logo is 49 minutes. That's what it feels like.
Some graphic designers were really having fun in the studio that day, weren't they?
I mean, it's really the Marvel logo is really just a giant. There's no nice way to say it, and we say inappropriate things. It's a giant, it's a dick measuring move. They're stroking it hard the whole time through this logo. But Loki is fantastic.
Okay,
I have seen all of WandaVision and all of Falcon Winter Soldier, and we're now two episodes into Loki. I think Loki's the best one so far.
Good stuff. Good Disney Plus recommendation there. For myself, it's just kind of tuning back into life, and something that returned this past week and is coming up again is the return of weddings, Mike. Our favorite movie, Crashers, which you and I used to watch all the time. Wedding Season's here. Wedding Season is back.
Wedding Season. Are you getting crab cakes?
I tried to. So we had a Sliders bar last weekend, a mac and cheese buffet, some tacos, some nice past apps, which is nice to see. Some fajita chicken wrapped in bacon. Very Texas wedding appetizers going on. And then I'm heading home for another weekend as well too. So I'll be posting some food pictures. I got a funny one of some wedding cake as well too, which you'll see on our food podcast Instagram page. It's Always End With Food Pod. If you want to check that out, we've got a new episode coming out later this week as well too. So obviously looking forward to just grubbing down, and we're going to have some interesting conversation on wedding food on our Always End With Food podcast as well too.
So yeah. Let's go ahead and do a shameless plug. You should listen to Always End With Food. It's new. Second episode coming out this week. If you don't subscribe to Always End With Food, you should. The same way you should subscribe to this podcast. And you know what? I'm thinking we may do a special drop in this feed just so people can know what to expect from Always End With Food.
I like that.
So
good stuff. Yeah. So wedding season's back. Excited to be back with the mass gatherings with the family and friends. Good to see everyone just rejoicing, you know, just family members hugging that haven't seen each other in a while. And obviously an opportunity for some prime food content. So that's coming your way.
Loving it. This is a great now segue into this week's guest.
Oh, Alex, almost by accident, right?
Amazing. I know, right? It's like we don't plan this stuff at all, or we do plan this stuff. I don't know. But it's no secret we play golf, one of us better than the other. That's you. And we're big into the food game. One of us maybe better than the other. That's me. And in our new pod, Always In With Food, like we said, we combine the two, mostly focused on food. And Alex, you found, of course, something that combines the fairways and the food.
Yeah, I mean, Darren Wood. It's our buddy Darren. And this is nice because, like, I don't necessarily always find guests who follow us first. But Darren found us, and I found his account and checked it out. I was like, fairways and food. I mean, this said, you sound like my friend already. I don't even know who you are. But so we started talking and wanted to have Darren on to discuss his account. It's really cool the way he fuses his golf life and his food life. Just a fun profile to follow. And he's across the pond, so we get the vibe of the Lynx Golf and the courses across Great Britain that he plays. It was great catching up with our buddy Darren.
We'll get to that conversation with Darren in just a moment. But first, as always, we want to let you know this interview is brought to you by Desert Fox Golf, our friends of the show and the makers of the Phone Caddy. The Desert Fox team is based in Arizona, so they know golf, and the Phone Caddy is crafted by both golfers and engineers. The Phone Caddy is unique because it mounts right onto your golf cart in seconds in a place where you can actually see and use your phone. Keep your yardage and scoring apps at your fingertips, change music, answer calls and texts, and more, all with the Phone Caddy from Desert Fox. It's the most functional way to keep your phone safe and ready on the course at all times. The Phone Caddy works seamlessly with almost any phone model and quickly becomes the talk of your foursome. And for our listeners, you can save 10% off your purchase of a Phone Caddy with the promo code COURSEOFLIFE. It comes in a range of colors, and you can even show your support with the patriotic line. So head on over to desertfoxgolf.com to get your Phone Caddy. And don't forget to use the promo code COURSEOFLIFE to save 10%. Again, that's promo code COURSEOFLIFE at desertfoxgolf.com.
Next up from across the pond, Manchester specifically, he's a golfer and a foodie, so naturally had to join us for a chat. It's the creator of the Fairways and Food account on Instagram that we love to follow, Darren Wood, joining the Course of Life. Darren, how are you doing today?
Hi, Alex. I'm all good. Thank you.
It's great having you on to connect. I said before we hopped on, it seems that we're kindred spirits because we post about golf and food all the time. We love obsessing over, you know, flavorful and photogenic food here. And we both love to golf, both myself and my co-host, who's not with us today, but he is in spirit. So you definitely speak our language. I'm curious, what was the original idea to start the account and have it focused on golf and food?
So the account started really as a personal blog, what I did of life in general. And then it suddenly realized on me, my life is all about food and golf. And there wasn't much more to it other than some social walking and stuff. So it became kind of natural that the blog turned into something that I'm passionate about, which is fairways and food and golf and all things foodie. So the account kind of moved from there, and I'm hoping to grow it a little bit over the next couple of years.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love what you do. And it speaks to how easy it is to get things up on social media and show your world to everyone out there. I'm curious, the food photos that we see on there, it's fairways_and_food for anyone who's checking on Instagram right now. The mix of things that you make yourself versus the restaurants. Well, what's the mix? Is it mostly your experiences out to eat, or is it more so what you're cooking in the kitchen?
Yeah, I think a little more what I'm cooking in the kitchen at the moment, but we've been under quite a heavy lockdown in the UK over the last 6 months. So we're pretty much open again now. So I'll be posting a lot more of the restaurants that I'm dying to get back into and try some of the food that I haven't been able to get to while we've been locked down in the UK. So a little bit more of home cooking at the moment, good old fashioned home cooking, and then a little bit more restaurant-y stuff as we move through summer in the UK.
Yeah, how was that for the past year for you? Because we definitely had a lot of that lockdown. Things are opening up now. Fortunately, we're able to get back out to our favorite restaurants. But what were some highlights for you from a cooking at home perspective in this past year? Was there anything specifically that you took up or an art specifically in the kitchen that you perfected?
Well, I think I took the opportunity during the lockdown, as I'm sure some people did, to try and get myself a little bit healthier by looking at the food that I was eating and how could I make what I love to cook that little bit more healthier, so that when we did get around to the summer and golf was back on the agenda, I was feeling better on the golf course. So learning how to take some of my favorite recipes and then turn them into a little bit more of a healthier option so that I could see the benefit out on the golf course.
Yeah, we all had the extra few minutes to err on the side of health during the past year, so we could think about what we're putting in our systems a little bit more. I appreciate that. And in terms of your golf as well, too, as that combines with food, had you always been a lifelong golfer, or when did the game first strike you?
Yeah, so I've been in, I'm in my 40s now and been involved in golf since I was a teenager, playing professionally a little bit and clearly was never going to be the next Lee Westwood or Phil Mickelson. I didn't really fancy teaching for a living, so I took a job in the golf industry in a different sector. But I've been involved in golf and passionate about it since I was about 14 or 15 years old. So golf and food are kind of my mantra.
Love that. So what do you think it is to get a little bit more kind of spiritual with it that makes golfers and kind of food lovers unite so well? You know, I know that there's lots of opportunity to eat before, during, or after a round, which we'll get into in a little bit as well. But what do you think it is that makes kind of that combination of those two audiences, the golfers and the food lovers, kind of unite?
I think golf and food really sync well together because it's a very social game. So playing golf is a very social game, and actually the act of eating is a very social thing to do. Going to restaurants, eating with friends. So it's really common to sit down with friends after a game of golf and grab a bite to eat, or as you say, even before the round. So it's I think the two go really hand in hand because of the social aspect of both of them.
Very cool. I've seen you post some scorecards. I know your game is pretty sharp. You didn't have quite the professional career you would have liked, but tell me, how often are you playing these days and what's the game looking like for you?
Game's looking pretty good. Having lost quite a bit of weight over the last 12 months, I've refound a little bit of golf game. So I'm getting a little coaching from a guy called Damien Taylor, who's taught a few European tour guys in the past. And then some physical training by a local guy to Manchester called Mike Murray, MM Physio. So between the guys, I've actually started to play some really good golf again. So I'm hoping that actually goes from a range game to the golf course in the next couple of weeks, and I can get some.
Seriously, amen to that. The one thing I'm surprised to find in the past year was, go figure, if you actually work out and you stretch your arms and you do arm exercises, you can actually gain some distance off the tee. So I found an extra 15 or 20 yards, which is a nice surprise for me. Tell me about golf now, where you are in the Manchester area, and specifically, what are some of the most exotic or unique places you've got to play maybe in the last year or two?
Yeah, so we're in the north of England. We're actually pretty blessed with some world-class golf resorts, such as Hillside, Royal Birkdale, host of the Open, and Royal Lytham,
yes,
Liverpool. So through what I actually do as a day job working in the golf industry, I've been to a lot of those courses. So very blessed to have been able to play some of these courses, some of these world-class courses. So the courses around Manchester are pretty good. A lot of private members clubs, and then you've got these resort-style courses as well that are pretty special.
Love that. Okay, cool. What I want to talk to you about is food during a day on the golf course, because I know you're an expert in it. Again, it's Darren Wood with the Fairways and Food Instagram account joining us here. And I just want to talk through the day and see maybe what the differences are culturally between here in the United States and across the pond where you are in terms of when, you know, food gets eaten by golfers over there where you are. Is there lots of eating done before the round you head out on the course? Is it done during or more so after? After the 19th hole, I'm curious what the mix is there.
I would say a typical golf day for somebody in the UK would consist of whatever they could grab for breakfast out for the golf course. I'd take a sandwich with them, but a lot of courses around here and certainly in the rest of the UK, I'm sure in America as well, have halfway houses. So you get to the ninth hole, and then there's always something getting your appetite going by the time you get to the 10th hole. So there's always something to purchase at the halfway house. So I would say a lot of people are eating mid-round, purchasing something from the halfway house, and then after it, it's normally a beer and something else to eat. So we golfers really do like to eat as well as golf.
Yeah, you've got the similar mix. Okay, I was just curious how similar it was. Now, one thing I noticed about English cuisine, and especially what you put on your feed as well too, I still can't get over as a spoiled American how you guys are putting beans on toast and how you guys use beans during breakfast. But I want you to retaliate and tell me what's the food that maybe you see in United States food culture or maybe at a golf course venue in the U.S. that just doesn't seem right to you?
Grits. I can't get my head around grits. I had a holiday a few years ago, a really great holiday across the States, and I was on a cruise, and I couldn't get my head around that. That was the one thing. I'm massively into food, as you obviously know. So that was a new experience for me.
Definitely. Nice. Yeah, it is a strange consistency. I'll give you that. It's very regional. Probably only about, I would say, 25 or 30% of the United States actually consumes grits pretty regularly. So it's definitely a niche food at that. So you did mention the halfway houses. What are typically in courses in your area? What do those look like? And I'm curious, as a side question, do you have lots of like snack carts going around the course with like the cart girl or guy serving beer in the middle of the fairway?
Absolutely, we have that. It's probably not as common as it is over in the States, but we certainly have in our resort style courses the cart going around the course offering the beer and crisps and snacks and sandwiches on as they're going around, and then certainly in the halfway house as well. I think you're very tempted for a mid-round beer, especially if the round's not going to plan. So I think the beer and the cart go hand in hand again in the UK as they do in America.
Good to hear. And obviously I want to wrap this up and talk about the 19th hole itself, which we love talking about on this podcast. We ask all our guests about the 19th hole. I want to ask you about the venue specifically, though. Dispel this myth for me, because all of the United States golf fans over here, we think that every single 19th hole in Britain looks like the Dunvegan at St. Andrews or something like that. Are they all kind of like pub style like that, or are they much more kind of like decorated restaurant style 19th holes in Britain?
You picked a great 19th hole up there. it is pretty common for them to be pub styled, but it really depends on the golf club itself. A lot of clubs in the UK are very traditional private members clubs, are less resort orientated. So you will find them a little bit more restaurant style. But I certainly think one of the positive byproducts of COVID has been how relaxed people have been about opening things up a little and eating a little bit more casually. But yeah, you get a real mix of pub style 19th holes and some more traditional restaurant style stuff.
And so just to paint the picture for people who haven't been over to your parts yet, the nicest 19th hole that you know in your area, kind of describe it. What makes it so unique after a day out on the course?
So I would say around the Manchester area, you're looking at around a hillside golf club near Southport, which has hosted the British Masters a couple of years ago.
Okay, yep.
You can come in after the course, have some great food, and then sit on the terrace and watch the golf come in from the terrace. And you can see where the European Tour guys were playing just a couple of years ago, watching this famous links on the on England's Gold Coast, as it's called. With a beer in hand, looking over the sunset at the Southport Beach. It's pretty special.
Yes, I love that. It was funny. I just saw a tweet recently talking about what's the best possible thing you can do as an amateur golfer. And my answer was you can birdie the 18th hole with the 19th hole watching. There's not much better than that for an amateur golfer. So I definitely think you know that vibe for sure. It's Darren Wood again joining us. It's fairways_and_food on Instagram. Let's get to some quick shot questions now and go through things I've seen on your account. I know you love meat. You're a big meat eater. You do it in all forms, grilled, smoked, and everything in between. What are your favorite like meats to photograph though? Because you take a lot of great pictures of the meals that you eat.
Yeah, I've certainly got into a lot of slow cooked meats at the moment. So getting really inexpensive joints of meat, slow cooking them, making them really delicious and tender. And then they make some great photographs when you put them in some kind of casserole or stew at the end. So they make for great meaty photographs on that.
Definitely. Yes. And if you ever make it out to Austin, Texas, where I am, we are the unofficial home of the slow cooked smoked meats, the brisket, ribs, sausage, everything like that. So if that trip is ever in your books, you let me know and we'll do the full barbecue tour for sure.
I certainly will. That sounds right in my wheelhouse.
Nice. One other thing I noticed about your photos as well too, Darren, is you do a very good job of just using really simple garnishes or things to make color stand out in your photography. This is both just for golf fans taking pictures, but just food fans in general. Well, what are some simple tips or simple garnishes that you use to help make your photos colorful?
I think you're absolutely right. Some simple garnishes on the side don't detract from what is probably the main event, which is the meat or the fish, or if you're vegetarian, the main veg that you use in the dish. Tomatoes make a great side dish in any variety, either as a salad or baked. I often bake them with some balsamic vinegar over the top, and they make for some fantastic images to sit alongside some slow-cooked meat.
Love that. Good use of tomatoes, indeed. All right, let's finish with it. I know everyone's wondering, especially because of this interview and your background, it's the 19th hole question that we like to end all our interviews with. You're very experienced at the 19th hole. So the million-dollar question is, when you finish 18 holes and you get into your favorite 19th hole, maybe it's at Hillside there, what is your go-to order? What's your meal and your drink that you like to have after a long day on the course?
My go-to meal is a pint of Guinness and a club sandwich. I think every 19th hole in the UK has a club sandwich of some description, and I always try and test out the club sandwich at the venues that I play at.
That's tried and true. I like it. You should start a review series. There's popular food review series here in the US reviewing pizza and things like that. Maybe every club sandwich you hit, you can give us a 1 to 10 and tell us what your thoughts are.
That sounds like a great idea.
Love it. Again, it's Darren Wood joining us, fairways_and_food on Instagram. Looking forward to the food content, the golf content, and everything else you're doing on social media. And we'll connect again soon.
That sounds great. Thanks, Alex.
That interview with Darren Wood is brought to you by our friends at Groove It Golf, makers of the Groove It Golf Brush. You've seen it on the bag of tour caddies and your favorite athletes and golf personalities on social media, and that means you need to get it on your bag today. This brush's patented pump sprays water or cleaning solution right onto the club face for you, making it quick and efficient to clean clubs or even your golf ball in seconds. The Groove It Brush includes a detachable magnet so you can bring the brush to the club head. And the Groove It Brush comes with a 3-year bristle guarantee. That means if you can wear out the brush head cleaning golf clubs in 3 years, send it back. Groove It will get you a free replacement. So prepare to be amazed with the consistency and control that clean grooves will give you. You're using your existing golf clubs to Groove It, you'll get the spin, trajectory, and consistency you're looking for. So head on over to grooveitbrush.com to get your Groove It Brush with free shipping in the U.S. Again, that's grooveitbrush.com to get your Groove It Brush today. And we're back. Great chat there with Darren. I just love golf and food to me just go hand in hand because you need to eat out on the course and then you need to eat when you're done. And it's good to know the 19th hole out there in his neck of the woods is the same as it is here.
Yeah, people don't realize how hunger inducing golf is. It's mm-hmm. a very strange thing to think about if you've just played other sports, but it's pretty equatable in terms of how hungry you get when you're out there on the course. It was cool to hear those cultural comparisons as well too. And it's funny how the club club sandwich, just it really travels. That is a universal 19th hole type of answer I get. You know, obviously the burger and the beer is like the tried and true American answer. The club sandwich though, Mike, that really goes international, I will say.
I feel like the club sandwich is overlooked sometimes here in the States.
I told Darren, I was like, Darren, you know, we got a celebrity over here in the US that just reviews pizza and he's famous for it. You should just review every club sandwich you eat. That'd be some content I would tune into.
There you go. Let's talk a little baseball real quick. Lay it on me. Your Red Sox are better than my Yankees. We never thought this was going to happen this year. And now you get to go to a Red Sox-Yankees game, and the Red Sox are probably going to beat the Yankees.
Yeah, and the goal is on Sunday, if the Red Sox are up like 10-0, I'm just going to send you a selfie video, and I'm just going to be maniacally laughing at Fenway Park as we hit our fifth home run over the monster. That's what I'm kind of envisioning. Well, it'll be the complete opposite now, of course, now that I just mentioned that. But yes, I'm making my return back. I've had a slow rollout to live sports return. You know, I first did the minor league baseball about a month or so here ago. That was about 1,000-2,000 people. Nice to be in the outfield, get back with the crowd. Then I did the Team USA women's soccer last week at a brand new soccer stadium here in Austin, Texas. I was 20,000 screaming soccer fans. And now I'm doing Red Sox Yankees in my return home to visit family this Sunday. Mike, Red Sox Yankees, you know how storied that rivalry is. It's quite literally the basis for our friendship and our on-air communication as well, way back to college. So always nice to catch up and get to one of these games because it's been, geez, maybe over a decade since the last time I saw one in person.
And of course, you're going to get a Fenway Frank because you have to get a Fenway Frank.
Definitely. It's a nice little 1:10 matinee Sunday game. Nothing better than that. Nice Sunday afternoon start. Get down there a little early. Frank's, couple beers. Maybe do a lap around. See what's changed at the old ballpark. But it's going to be great to be back out with the Boston faithful this Sunday.
Let's hashtag always end with food.
Yes, brought to you by our friends at Toasty Bites. COL20 is your promo code for 20% off, or just head to toasty.com/COL. Check them out. Very healthy snack that does not melt. I just posted it last week, Mike. I played in 105 degree weather in Texas, and that Toasty Bite, it just refuses to melt. I got the peanut butter dark chocolate, tasted fantastic. Like I mentioned, I'm heading home this week. So not only does that mean I'm doing the hometown Boston things like the Red Sox Yankees, but it's home cooking. You know, I'm back in New England for the first time in a year and a half, Mike, since I've seen family or friends back home. So I'm just excited to get back home to the home cooking. You know?
Yeah. You know, it's so are you going to go out in Boston? You going to go to the, seafood or are you getting Italian? That's the question.
Trying to do both. Definitely just going to get mom's spaghetti at home. That's tried and true with the meat sauce. But I'm going to be spending at least a night, maybe two, on Cape Cod. So maybe a little fried seafood action, a lobster roll potentially. You remember last summer, I tried to recreate the lobster rolls here in Texas by getting lobster meat from the store. Good, but not quite like it is at home. So I'll be getting one of those for sure.
The real problem, I think, to try to really create a lobster roll anywhere outside of New England is that you can't get the right kind of top sliced hot dog bun. They sell top sliced hot dog buns in the supermarket. They are not the right kind of top sliced hot dog buns.
Good point as well, too. So I'll be looking for the bun specific lobster roll. I need to fulfill that craving. But yeah, seafood and Italian both on the list as I head home this week.
Yeah. I don't have anything coming up, but of course this past week was our anniversary with my wife, our fourth anniversary. So we went out to dinner.
Oh, the semi fancy dinner, correct?
Semi fancy dinner. There was, you had asked last week how many pieces of silverware I thought I was going to have. I ended up with, over the course of the meal, 5 pieces of silverware.
Not bad. That means it's a pretty solid place. Definitely.
Well, and it was 5 because I ended up ordering a spicy pork ragu, which was fantastic. And so they brought a spoon as well after they changed the silverware after the appetizer.
Pasta mixer. Love it.
Yeah. And it was always fun, not to make fun of my wife, but we ordered a cannellini dip. Starter, and she didn't realize until it came and I told her what it was that it was actually like cannellini beans. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Because cannellini, the word itself, just sounds so romantic and Italian, and it must be filled with tomato and cheese, right?
Exactly.
It's actually just beans, but yeah.
Just ground. It was very good though. I will say it was very good.
Good stuff.
And I have another question for you, Alex. We're both New Englanders, so we're used to iced coffee, but how are you with sweet tea?
Oh, well, so this was an entire, that's an entirely Texas thing, sweet tea. So,
well, it's not just Texas, it's a Southern thing.
For me, I never learned it or really had it until I moved to Texas. Things like brisket, never even had it until I moved to Texas. Different for you because of your family background. Queso, never had it until I moved to Texas for real. Just jalapenos on things, never had it until I moved to Texas. And sweet tea is in that group as well. I love it. I'm scared. It's one of those things where, like, I never want to actually see how it gets made because I'm pretty sure there's an alarming amount of sugar in there. It's just like an out of sight, out of mind thing because I love sweet tea so much, but I don't want my heart broken to see how much sugar is actually in there.
Well, I mean, I made some sweet tea. I didn't realize it was going to be this sweet when I was making it, but I made sweet tea. And it is awfully sweet and it has a lot of sugar in it.
And I kind of want to know how much, but I kind of don't.
Well, let's just say that I completely understand why you have the image of people sitting on their rocking chairs on their front porch, just sipping sweet tea.
Yeah,
you sip it. You don't drink this, you sip it.
So Southern. It really is. Yeah. What you do is the real Southern move is you get the gigantic big gulp cup of sweet tea and then you get to the porch and you actually take the lid and the straw off and then you're just slowly downing the cup like right from the top and you get little chunks of the ice as well with the sweet tea.
Yep.
That's like the real classic slow drink there. I'm a fan.
And there's something, at least here in Savannah, that I've never seen anywhere else, which is chewy ice.
I need to research.
It's first of all, of course, in the Northeast, all you get with ice typically is like cubes. You get ice cubes in the Northeast, right? You never really get crushed or anything else. And like now I'm in Savannah and there's like little balls of ice and this chewy ice. And it's like
pellets, kind of like Dippin' Dot size or a little bit bigger?
A little bigger, maybe. Like a good sized ball bearing.
That sounds great with sweet tea to be honest.
And they are, I mean, I don't know what they do to it, but it's interesting.
The ice around the world coming up more on next week's Course of Life. Fascinating things here. And I'll always end with food. That's a recap of what's going on in our life. Thank you to everyone for tuning into Course of Life and tune in to Always End with Food and Always End with Food Pod on IG later this week. New episode with a spring baking champion from the Food Network as well. Tune in for that and more coming your way next week. We'll be right back.